Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Anne Filippi, founder of The New Health Club. If you want to know about psychedelics as new mental health tools, you came to the right place. I talk to innovators, thought leaders, and disruptors creating the future of mental health and mental wellness. And we think that the future is already here. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of The New Health Club Show. This is one of the nerdiest episodes at The New Health Club Show so far, but also one that's really necessary right now. In this episode, I'm talking about AI and psychedelics. Is there even a connection between these two? And if so, how does it look like? I think there is a pretty strong connection. Sam Altman, chief executive of OpenAI, is chairman of a startup called Journey Collab that aims to tap into the promise that psychedelic drugs have shown in clinical trials and make them broadly available for people who suffer from mental health and drug use disorders. The man bringing artificial intelligence to the masses through the viral chatbot ChatGPT wants to revolutionize mental health care and addiction treatment with psychedelic drugs, writes The Washington Post. But there are more things to address than this, which I did with my great panel happening at Soho House, Berlin a few weeks ago. My guests for a talk about the whole AI and psychedelic situation and how their connection could look like is the incredible AI expert Nicole Büttner, founder and CEO of Merantix Momentum. Merantix believes that to unlock the profound potentials of AI, a collaborative approach is needed. My second guest is the great Sergio Perez Rosal, MD, part of the Mind Foundation Berlin and the CEO and medical director of the Ovid Clinics in Berlin, an established clinic in Berlin that works with ketamine. So the three of us talk about if we need psychedelics to understand AI at all, or if this is just a crazy theory, and if AI will be a really productive drug developer. What does this mean? And what does it mean for scientists? But there's more. Can AI give you a spiritual experience? And will we need additional dimensions and tools to understand our future altogether, which AI and psychedelics could provide? God, as you see, there are so many questions which we have to address in the future, but we just try to tackle some of them. And I hope you enjoy the show from our live podcast at Soho House. Yeah, welcome everybody on this springy kind of rainy evening. We're super excited for this specific topic, and I'm very happy that we have two great experts who will shortly introduce themselves. So just a couple of words about The New Health Club. We started as a podcast in 2019 about a psychedelic podcast, and just talking, like having scientists, founders, VCs, therapists talking about the new era of psychedelics that we're just experiencing. And this whole podcast thing now turns also into a retreat business. So if you want to know more about this, we can talk to you about this later. But tonight we're going to talk about psychedelics and AI with these fantastic people. And maybe you guys introduce yourselves first. Nicole, maybe you start.
For sure. And thanks, Anne, for inviting us here. It's really great to see how you're giving this whole topic a very scientific and yet very human touch. So I'm Nicole. I'm basically an AI entrepreneur here in Berlin. I am a founder of a company called Merantix Momentum that is helping basically companies, government agencies to build AI solutions. So our mission is to get more AI into the world. And I'm also part of the investment committee and board of Merantix, which is an AI venture studio. So we're building new AI businesses and working with founders on new business models such as breast cancer screening, fertility, new materials, et cetera. And yeah, so I would say I'm a tech optimist and yeah, very happy to be here and discuss the topic with you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anne, for the invitation tonight. I'm very glad to be here. Name is Sergio. I'm a medical doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm a specialist in anesthesia, intensive care, and emergencies. And I'm the executive and medical director of the Ovid Clinic in Berlin. That's the first clinic using psychedelics to treat mental health disorders. All legal. And well, we are in Friedrichshain. I'm also part of the executive board of the Mind Foundation, which is the scientific organization, nonprofit organization that organizes conferences, does the studies. We are working right now, finishing up the phase 2 study with psilocybin, the episode study with a total of 144 patients in 2 sites in Charité and Mannheim. And it's looking very promising. And secondly to that, I'm also a little bit of a geek, and I like to follow technology and the development. And now very interesting in the last couple of months, what's happening in the AI world.
So a great combination. So psychedelics, AI. I would like to have this conversation to be it as fearless as possible, because like, Nicole had another great talk recently, and a lot of people had in the audience had actually questions around how they would be replaced by AI, how this could look like. And of course, we can't really answer that question right now. So, but I think this should be a talk or also an opportunity to really look into, let's say, how this can really shape our future in a way that, of course, we can't answer 100% yet, but maybe coming from a perspective that is not driven by fear, which I always find more productive and more kind of creative, actually. And I would like to start with a comment of Yuval Harari. You guys know him all. I think the big tech philosopher. And he says, like, social media was the first contact between AI and humanity lost. But now we are years after his like idea how AI could obviously destroy kind of the world or what he's thinking about that. But I would like to start with a question for the two of you. So are our brains actually made for AI, and or do our brains need psychedelics to understand AI? Who goes first?
I think it's a very interesting angle that you're talking about there. It's complementary, I think. And I wouldn't be that scared just yet about AI. I would be optimistic and looking how we can interact with these systems to make processes even more accessible to us. And whereas we could delegate some of the more intensive tasks to an AI, we could liberate a lot of time to actually do whatever we want to do and therefore bring more wealth to the world. Back to your question, is AI or are human brains created for AI? I think since human brains created these machines that simulate or kind of interact with us in a way that they seem conscious or intelligent, I think they are compatible.
Interesting question. So my impression was that we actually know so little about the human brain that maybe we can't answer the question yet. And hopefully AI will help us to understand the human brain even better. So maybe we can even reverse that and kind of think about how we can use the technology to understand patterns that we can now not yet properly sense or explain, and kind of understand patterns and mechanisms a little bit better. That would be my hope. An analogy would be kind of what we're trying to do in outer space, right? We kind of don't understand a lot about what's going on in outer space. I think there's like very low single digit percentage of what we can actually explain. And we have theories about things, but actually it's only theories and we keep creating better versions of them. And maybe it's similar with the brain.
So let's jump right in terms of psychedelics. So at the moment we have classic research companies who are researching psychedelics that we know, like MDMA, LSD, ketamine, psilocybin. So like we had this conversation earlier. So they research a compound for a certain mental health condition, like MDMA for depression, or PTSD, psilocybin for treatment-resistant depression. So now there are already companies working with AI producing millions of new next-generation drugs that are actually tested how they fit to our receptors, which is already possible with AI. So the question would be, why even bother about LSD right now? About the classics, let's say.
We are just beginning to understand how classic psychedelics such as LSD, psilocybin, the active compound in magic mushrooms, and other atypical psychedelics such as ketamine or MDMA create this altered states of consciousness. Now, there is another level, what you were talking about, the companies creating new chemical entities that kind of dock on the same receptors in a more specific way, with the attempt to reduce side effects, to control a little bit more of the time or the duration of the experience. And that's where classically this would have to go through a lot of experiments, one molecule after the next one, for scientists to actually discern the different nuances of psychedelic experience, be it mescaline, 2CB, LSD. And now with AI, you just create a model of the receptor, the serotonin receptor 5-HT2A, which is the one responsible for the psychedelic experience, as far as we know. And then you throw a lot of data and a lot of differently shaped molecules that still dock on it. And then you can measure hypothetically how that would interact and create an experience. That accelerates the process of discovery of a molecule and the costs by, I just to say a name, 100,000-fold. And that could lead to us, first of all, understanding better how these molecules create different altered states of consciousness, different psychedelic experiences, but also to create therapies that are more specific to one diagnose, that work more for a character, for a type of brain. Why we should care about LSD? Because we are still just at the very beginning of understanding that molecules that we have at hand right now.
I would maybe add just, what you're describing is one of the great superpowers of AI, right? So basically take a universe of possibilities that seems infinite. It's actually not infinite. It's a very, very large number. So if we recombine all the molecules, basically we have in all the possible combinations, it will take longer than the sun burns and more molecules than we have in the universe. That's kind of the estimate. So we can't actually physically even do that in our lifetime reasonably. So that's one of the superpowers, to basically be able to take this huge universe and find the most promising paths there that could be combinations that lead to psychedelics that dock on better, right? All this you know much better than me. So, and we use this in many different domains, right? Psychedelics, drug discovery, alternative materials, etc. So I think that's one of the aspects. And the other one, why maybe, and I've never had a psychedelic experience, but maybe the other component is to tie this to the effect. So one thing is creating a compound, but then the other one would be to actually observe the effect and understand the effect in the real world. And from what I understand about the space, there's probably very little compared to the universe of people and maybe also other treatments. Probably the documentation of these effects is still very limited, right? In terms of, I don't know, I can imagine like diabetes is much better and all the medication developed for this is much better documented, for example, than psychedelics and the effects, just because it has been a strand of science that is not so, it's not so mainstream. It was kind of, from what I read, had a hype and then a long winter, like AI. And so I would say you also need a period to observe the actual effects of different substances. From an AI perspective, you would want to have a lot of people trying this to get the data, right?
That's to get the goal.
Yeah, maybe addressing that. I agree. I agree. The other part, one is development of new drugs that work better. And the other part is how can we use AI to make advances in research. And as you say, with diabetes, you can measure how much a quantity of insulin changes your blood sugar levels. With a psychedelic experience, it's not that quantifiable, right? So you have the challenge of perspective. The first person perspective, which is what psychology, psychiatry, psychotherapy tries to address and interact with that prompt machine that is giving you explanations of what they experience. And the other part is the neuroscientific part of what do we understand of brain regions lighting up in our scans and how do they correlate? Yeah. Bringing those two sides of the coin together with AI, I think that's one of the major steps that we could do. And there's one thing called qualitative research, where people just write down everything that they experience, that they have changed in their states of consciousness through a psychedelic experience, and then run it through a system that can highlight which words come again and again when we're talking about an experience facilitated by psilocybin. How is this different from an experience that is induced by LSD? And yeah, AI could do wonders in that part.
Sorry, we're like kind of going down a rabbit hole here, but I think it's a really interesting point because you could have one point of view where you say this experience, this altered state of mind is basically between you and your soul and your God. And it's something that is not possible to observe from the outside. I don't know. Never been there. Or you could say, and then basically no matter how good sensors we build, we would never be able to touch what happens on those trips or in those experiences. And the second perspective would be, we just cannot measure it. We don't have the right sensor, like a microphone or an infrared or whatever, you know, EEG, all these kind of things. And with time, when we develop better sensors, we will actually be able to have much more direct access to what's actually going on. And if that is the case, let's say we think that we develop better sensors and we'll be able to observe much better firsthand, right? Not through like a stille Post. I don't know what that's in English. So you have an experience, right? And that's how I imagine, like a dream or something. And then I try to remember what it is and I try to tell it to you or I write it down. And that's has already so many limitations in it just to create what is the actual effect of it. So as a data person, as an AI person, I always want a direct sensor, if possible, sort of raw data. And so if we go down that rabbit hole, then it would mean, wow, then at some point, maybe you could really gain substantial deeper knowledge of what's going on.
Well, that's like one of the biggest, not challenges, but topics, even also in clinical trials, right? That you come out of the trip and then you would have to basically tell the psychiatrist or the therapist what you've seen. And then you would say, oh, I've seen an elephant walking, and it could be like 5 million variations of this elephant walking. And then you try to get into integration, like how was your feeling about it? But it's still, even then, if you come back from a retreat and talk to your friends, what you've seen, and they're like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. This trip, I mean, okay, yeah, it's like you told me what you've seen, but still you have a hard time translating really what it did to you. So, and how do you deal with that, for example, in the current research? Because you guys are also doing this first really big psilocybin study at Charité. So this must be also a topic there, I guess, right? I mean,
so yeah, in terms of psychedelic experiences, there's this term called the ineffability of the experience. An experience that is ineffable basically describes something that you cannot put into words. So that's the first problem. How do you put something that is ineffable in a way that someone will understand and try to grasp what it meant to you? Because if you're seeing an elephant, it might not mean anything to me, but it means a lot of things to you, right? So it's about also the relevance of your associations in your brain, how your childhood was formed, and how this biographic content that might come up in a psychedelic experience has a relevant for the interaction with a psychiatrist, with a psychotherapist. And it is very difficult. It's very difficult. You can ask someone that is a writer and they will paint you a beautiful picture of what their psychedelic experience was. But not every patient is a writer. And then you have to try to find their language and go to the level of interaction that extracts something of worth, of value. And we're talking now about patients trying to get better, right? So that's the main aim and what I'm talking about. Yeah. Psychedelic experiences are ineffable. And sometimes the sensors are great. Sometimes, yeah, we see nice brain scans and lights popping up and say, well, that's the visual center and this is the motor center. But the interpretation of this, we are not yet there.
So how could AI then, for example, like translate a mystical experience to us, which we don't understand?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, right, I'm talking again about track one and track two. Maybe it's not possible at all because we cannot observe it. And that's also the limitation of AI, right? We need data. All these great models that you're seeing out there right now, they're trained on huge amounts of data. And that's why for fields where we don't have this data, it's so much harder. And it's always, you can think about it like it's a representation of reality and it's a simplification of reality in most sense of the word. So basically, it's like a shadow of you, right? And it's maybe more than two dimensionals, maybe multidimensional, but it's not exactly you. That's why I'm talking about these senses. It's not so romantic, right? But at some point, oh, you get more than the shadow. You also get some color or like it's a proper image, but it's still not seeing what's in your thoughts, etc. So it's always this data problem. And that's why these experiences, when you talk about internal experiences, we're so limited ourselves to kind of document what it is that it's super, super hard. But if we now think about, for example, if you think about how many, let me talk about my own age. If I think about how many photos there exist of my childhood versus my one-year-old son, right? Like I'm already documenting his life much differently and much denser for that is observable to outsiders than my childhood was. And if we just project this into the future about how many data points there will be about an individual life and about your experiences, like 10 years from now, I'm not sure we can imagine this. Imagine you get sensors, some sort of implants about not only your location, but who you're in proximity with, what you're reading, all these kind of things that all adds up to then creating a lot of data points that will also create a lot of context. So then maybe a model can understand why you think something different about an elephant than me, just because there's much more data. I've been to India 17 times and maybe you haven't, whatever, but you've been to Solakshagaten, you know, or I don't know, you have a pillow that has an elephant and you see it every night, what, you know? So all of this will all of a sudden become observable and we can introduce this into an actual model. And then the model can do something with it and create context. So it's going down a rabbit hole, right? But it's something I think we can already imagine happening if we just think about what the progress has been in the last 20 years. I don't remember how old I am. and project this into the future. So I think the possibilities, to come back to your question, will be quite tremendous at some point.
That brings to mind this term called qualia. And qualia is easiest explained as how can you be sure that when you say, I see a color and this is red, we are seeing and interpreting the same way. How we see this thing that we agree to call a certain way and that we physically know that there's a certain wavelength that is activating certain receptors that go to our neurons and then lights up this area. But who can ensure that my red is the same as yours? And if that starts with colors, bring a lot of complexity into the system. And there's one saying that says reality is just an hallucination that we all agree upon.
Yeah, and again, so I think, and you might be totally right, maybe this is a riddle we cannot solve because there won't be a sensor, right? I'm coming back to this unromantic picture that we can observe this with. And it will be between me and my God and my soul, right? And this will be a very metaphysical thing that we cannot write down. And maybe that's also part of life. And that's maybe also how it's supposed to be, right? No judgment call on this. But if we can, then we will, right? We will exploit this data at some point.
So one thing that's really interesting is that in terms of psychedelics and AI, there's often suddenly vocabulary around, we almost want to say like a spiritual, almost religious experience. And even German Bild-Zeitung was quoting Kevin Rose, the podcaster, saying that he explained that some people who already got in touch with ChatGPT-4 talked about it as if they have seen God. I mean, this is kind of really something very special that is coming towards us and hasn't been there since probably Apple or Steve Jobs, I guess, kind of around this time when you had like a spiritual brand around a computer. But don't we all like start to think that we need extra dimensions to understand the world in terms of in our own brain, but also in our technology? Isn't it really that we need more tools to really understand what is for the next 10, 15 years to work around them? I mean, it's a serious question. It's not even like, oh, let's step away from technology and just, you know, move to the countryside, because there's obviously new challenges and new kind of ideas around what we have to put out there. So what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I would say that that basically you have, I mean, you could almost say maybe that's something that AI and psychedelics have in common, right? So with AI, we try to find patterns. So we observe a lot of data and we try to find connections in data. So algorithms, and this goes back to the drug discovery example, can be super powerful at unlocking and finding these connections that would just take us a lot of iterations to do. So for example, when you see these AlphaGo, right? Everybody knows these AlphaGo algorithms, where basically it's this, you have a game, it has a very simple rule, and the AI agent can basically learn this in like one day much better than humans. And that's basically just because it can do a lot of iterations very fast. We would probably also be there. We learn actually faster, I would say, than AI, because it takes us maybe, I don't know, often can you play it? Maybe 10,000 iterations to learn the game super well. And it would take like 3 million, 7 million, 15 million iterations for an AI to learn it. So, but it's very powerful with a lot of data to get these patterns. And maybe that's similar, right? I mean, maybe, I don't know if you, I'm curious about psychedelics. So maybe you can uncover connections and patterns that are there that you cannot uncover when you don't have this tool. So that's kind of maybe a commonality, how we can see it as a tool. And yes, the world is complex and it's becoming more and more complex. I think we're all craving for this layer of understanding and meaning and understanding what's going on within ourselves and out there. So I can totally see that. And I think this godlike aspect that you mentioned, ChatGPT-4, exactly, and we're already speculating about GPT-5. I was just looking at a deck today. And I think, I mean, when we already see, right, the whole question is, how do we define intelligence? And is it me playing better chess or AlphaGo or understanding a book or finding context? And now we're kind of seeing AI has already conquered this narrow aspect, right? It can play chess better. It can detect images better than human. It can do certain things just better than humans already in a very narrow path. And now we combine this with this trend of ChatGPT that everybody's showing us, oh, now it understands context. So we have one element, it's already better on single tasks. Now it's starting to understand context more, right? So all of human history, all of my history, all of the internet, let's put it this way. And now we think, okay, what if data points get better and denser around individuals, around, right? So you can kind of see and look at certain dots, and then, yeah, you can get to a point where you think, yeah, it could get superhuman. And we're looking at that trajectory right now, for sure.
Going back to the similarities between the reiterations, I think when our carbon-based system that is brand new, learning to walk is a reiteration and reiteration. And this goes about almost everything. I have a one, almost 2 year old at home, and I see how he fails and he tries again and then he wants to do it again and he wants to do it again. And that's what AI does effortlessly forever. And we become a little bit more rigid because we tend to stick to what works for us, tend to stick to create patterns, habits, ways of thinking that have brought us where we are right now. And it can't be that bad if this system is still alive. But sometimes that leads to unhealthy patterns of referring to yourself, talking to yourself. How many times do I have to remind myself every day that I would never talk in the way that I sometimes talk with myself to anyone else? Yeah, being kind to oneself. And that's where psychedelics play a big role in increasing neuroplasticity, synaptoneogenesis, increasing the ability of neurons to create new patterns, to break that rigidity and create new habits. This window of opportunity has to be guided, shaped for it to have a longer lasting effect than what it does just while you are during the experience. And that's where the psychotherapeutic aspect comes into, because the substances alone won't change anything. It's a catalyst. The psychedelics are catalysts of transformation. Yeah. You can use the window of opportunity and create new ways of thinking, stimulate though that creativity, or the window closes. Yeah. And if psychedelics or drugs alone would induce the change, I don't think I would have a job here in Berlin.
Okay. I mean, I remember reading this article, I think in the pandemic, about the first AI therapist. I think Elsa or Elisa was the name. That could detect depression in a patient much more precise than a human therapist. Because the patient would eventually say to the therapist, no, no, it's totally cool, I'm fine, and then jump out of the window the next day, which I actually heard a couple of times that people who were refusing to accept maybe their depression played in front of a therapist, something like that. And then in front of AI, they couldn't, because AI would detect their wording, like, you know, certain symbols or behavioral models that would say, well, no, this person is depressed. But then we would think like, but what about the human factor of a therapist? So is this going to be a conflict in the future, that we have maybe precise AI therapists versus empathic therapists?
I've seen very interesting models and very interesting programs that can detect changes in your voice tonality, in the choice of your words, all the way through just talking to a microphone and then getting a reading of how you're feeling today compared to yesterday or last week. And I'm like, huh, I thought I could do that better than a machine. And it's like, well, where is this all going? And I think this is going to help us detect such cases, as you were saying, that we as humans with our human flaws fail to detect. I'm not really worried that it will substitute a therapist, because it can detect a lot of things very well, and it can compute a lot of data in a way that it gives you a diagnose or, a state of your emotions. But does it really understand, or can it be empathic only because it can process data? I don't know that. Maybe not yet.
Yeah, I think in this example, I would also, for now, but who knows? I would also think that probably I would not be worried that the therapist gets replaced by the algorithm, but maybe the therapist gets replaced by another therapist who uses an algorithm, right? For better diagnostics, for example.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. I read this article I pulled out when I researched AI psychedelics. Some very interesting Medium article came up about especially our question that we talked about, like how religious a machine can be by themselves without a human interaction. So almost like a machine is becoming a new human being in a way. So, and I really would like to read this, because I want you guys to really say something about this, because I think it puts the problem in very three interesting definitions. So first, can a machine have a private experience that is important to the machine, but that is reluctant to talk about with others, aka human beings? Second, could a machine have a private experience of the divine, which we also wouldn't know from that machine? Third, could that experience make a machine into something like a prophet? I mean, it's kind of a mix of a horror scenario and something that makes total sense. So is this something you think that will go in this direction, or is this just like a human anxiety fantasy?
So personally, I don't think that. Philosophically, I would not agree. I think there is something metaphysical that, like, you call it the divine, or you, I don't know, you call it something that we can maybe not explain yet. And I think that will, that is kind of also makes us human. And that is, I mean, we're more than, my conviction is we're more than a sort of body and a computer.
Physical
here.
Body.
Right? There's something metaphysical that, I don't know, some people call it the soul or whatever you want to call it. And I think that's something that a machine doesn't have. And I would say that my hypothesis would be that for at least the last two of these points, you would probably need something like a soul to develop this, to kind of tap into this universal energy that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A shared hallucination. I think about that and what would it mean for a machine to have a religion? Maybe broader speaking, how do we define spirituality? For me, and this is my personal definition, is how do I relate to something that is bigger than myself and that will transcend my existence, yeah? That gives some kind of meaning to suffering, to waking up, to doing things. And going back to this idea that there's something that a machine might, if I understood it correctly, a machine might think but won't feel the necessity to share.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting thought experiment, yeah.
And also that it would eventually have better ideas than humans, not only dangerous ideas, unless it's in the hands of some Bond villain or something. But I mean, it makes more and more sense, right? And bringing it back quickly, maybe to psychedelics, it's like, I mean, in these experiences, a lot of people kind of reconnect with their body, kind of, they become more grounded. They kind of try to understand what their body is telling them, which they can't do before. But at the same time, they also encounter a completely new spirituality that they didn't even have, like, in church or like in their religion, their religious practices. So I think it's an interesting equal thing that is happening, that we, let's say if you, and we had this conversation before, if you twice a year, you engage in a psychedelic experience, which means your brain will, you do this for, let's say, 5 years, your brain will be a different one than it is now. So if you, let's say twice a year, you go on a truffle trip. So do you think we're actually craving this kind of change in ourselves? How is your experience in that clinic? I mean, you have like a daily encounter with patients. Huh? Would they actually tell you, oh, I want to have a different persona. I want to have a different brain. I don't want to be this person anymore. Because if you go on social media, coming back to Harari, it seems like you should be a different person anyway. Like after 5 minutes of scrolling, doom scrolling, you under the impression you shouldn't be yourself. So, but I wonder, like, after a psychedelic experience, do people actually tell you as a therapist, oh, I should be somebody else, or I want to be somebody else?
I think after a lot of big or meaningful experiences, we are a different self. And do we have a self? That's another question, right? How do we define our self? Yeah. And some have spiritual experiences. Some are craving to find that connection. And some others just think that there's this drug that's going to do something with their brain, that's going to lead to symptom reduction. And yeah, it varies a lot. And we try to guide the patients through this openness, this curiosity to find out what is in there and how this relates to their picture of their self. Yeah. I think not only humans, but there's a lot of animals that look at ways on how to alter their consciousness. I mean, dolphins play with fish to exert the venom and get high on that.
With a psychedelic fish. Is that what, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, apes get drunk. It's I think in the nature of living things to alter consciousness and find meaning.
So how would you explain what AI really will contribute to a really one of the biggest shifts that we are experiencing in pretty much every part of our lives right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing right now is that it's cutting through a lot of noise also for us, right? It's sometimes crazy noise if you're saying social media or other things, but it can also cut through a lot of things, right? A lot of people have discovered ChatGPT now, which we have been already working with different user interfaces for like 3 years. So we know foundation models already a long time, but now it's in the wider public and everybody has access to it. And it shows that you can curate data very effectively, right? In this universe of complex, every day there's a new news flow. You can kind of curate things beautifully, which is interesting. It's useful in many cases. It can also have obviously fallbacks depending on who programs this curation models, right? Whose subconscious biases go in there? Is it then factually correct? All these kind of things are obviously topics, but I think it can help us explain the world better. And it can help us hopefully also solve some of the most pressing issues faster than we would be able to. So that's what makes me optimistic about the technology and why I keep working on it. If I were convinced that we're going to destroy the whole planet with it, I mean, probably not devote my whole active working life to it. But you know, you can also use it for ugly, weird stuff, right? I mean, when you think about warfare and how that will evolve, it can become very scary, like nuclear technology, like other technologies. So yeah.
And I see there another similarity to the psychedelic field, but because some would call them technologies of consciousness, and how you, by administering a substance, you change the vulnerability, the susceptibility to other ideas in people. I don't believe in that phrase, trust the medicine, because these are, again, vectors of culture, vectors of ideas. You will most probably be susceptible to ideas of the group that you are around while you are on a psychedelic state. And that group might have your best interests in their heads, or they might just be trying to influence you. And it's a tool, and tools can be used for good as they can be used for bad things.
So is it also, because that's an interesting thing you bring that up, because if you're in a retreat group where you meet before and you have a conversation, and I had this experience once that it was actually a person who was a friend of mine, but I felt like in the experience, the actual feelings were highlighted, and it was not a very empathic and friendly feeling suddenly. And I had the feeling it was influencing my psychedelic experience. So is this something that can actually happen? That you, do you know what I mean? That it's basically you have like a pretend to have like a nice relationship, but then suddenly in the trip or in the retreat, basically this is no longer because you're unconscious. You're not conscious, like pretending you like each other. So, but it kind of goes away. And let's say the actual authentic feeling comes to the forefront. Is this something that is possible, actually?
Of course, that can happen once the social norms are diluted in a group setting where everybody is in an altered state. Absolutely. But on the other side, I will always recommend to take everything that you experience in a psychedelic state with a grain or a bucket of salt, because it's not everything true, right? There are cases of people that come out of an experience and say, now I know this repressed memory has come back and this family member did this or this to me, which can potentially destroy whole families without it necessarily being true. So always be critical, not only of others, but also to yourself.
Very good advice. So thank you for being here. Again, like hang out a little bit and ask our fantastic guys here whatever you want to know. Yeah, so thank you for being here. I know it was a very specific talk today, but I think a talk that is coming, all these questions are coming towards us right now.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the New Health Club Show, and please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or if you would like to sign up for our newsletter, please go to www.thenewhealthclub.de and subscribe to the newsletter. Again, please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Clubhouse, of course. There's also a New Health Club now. Or even better, sign up to our newsletter on thenewhealthclub.de. I talk to you very soon.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.